This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
This is Sons of the Flag Radio, brought to you by Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. Our mission at Sons of the Flag is to revolutionize burn care and the quality of life for veterans, first responders, and families. Sons of the Flag believes that the future of burn care resides in research and development. Our vision is to accelerate and create the process of testing leading technologies and pushing them into circulation for immediate use by burn survivors across the nation. We are truly thankful for the support that everyone continues to show Sons of the Flag during these difficult times that our country and the rest of the world are currently experiencing. Without your continued support and your shares on all social media and your donations, Sons of the Flag mission would not be existing. And so for that, we are truly thankful for you. So we'd like to start all of our shows off by honoring our fallen brothers and sisters since our last show. But we also want to take an extra moment of silence for all fallen law enforcement and military personnel throughout this great nation. So tonight, our fallen heroes are Donald Gross, Brian Bush, Jonathan Flakler, James Ludium, David Spink, Benjamin Poison, William Steinberg, Robbie Jones, Julian Wilson Jr., Paul Buttram, Kenneth Lakeo, Kelsey Sadler, Max Fortuna, William Brooks, Austin Smith, James Radford, Wayne Doyle, Brian Miller, Mark Holt, Stephen McCann, John McGuire, and Jesse Gerhardt. Let us take a moment of silence. So, we have a special guest tonight, and I'm going to start off by reading an excerpt from his book, What the Fire Ignited, by Shay Askew. Jeff and I stood beside each other on the opposite side of the driveway, careful to keep our distance as we didn't want to get stung by the yellow jackets. The next thing we knew, without a word, we felt something splash us. It hit me on the right side of my body, splashing my shoulder, neck, and face. At the same time, it splashed Jeff on his left side. We didn't even recognize what it was until it hit the flickering match, and whoosh, we were engulfed in flames. Gasoline. The right side of my body and face were on fire, but for some reason I was still terrified and being stung by the yellow jackets, so I ran across the street to my yard to put out my flames, recalling the lessons learned from watching the TV show Code Red. I stopped, dropped, and rolled to put my flames out. Then I noticed Jeff was still over there screaming, completely consumed by flames. Instinctively, I ran back across the street and up the driveway, grabbed the water hose, and put the flames out. I continued hosing us both down with water alternating between the two of us. The cold water provided temporary relief, but I had to share it every 5 seconds with Jeff. I still remember holding the hose with my right hand and positioning it on our heads, letting the water just pour down our bodies. We were completely blackened, our skin falling off, our clothes melted to our bodies. I remember touching my head and my hair coming out in my hands. We could smell the charred flesh. As I looked at Jeff, I couldn't recognize his face. What just happened? Our bodies were burning from the inside out. Words can't describe the radiating heat, and the burning wouldn't stop. The pain got worse with every passing second. When I read that, my mind reverted to my kid. And I had to pause for a little bit to kind of take in what I just read. That's every kid in America. That's every kid going outside playing with their friends. And in a matter of seconds, a life is completely altered.
Yep.
So I want to welcome Shay.
Very honored to have you on.
It is an absolute blessing to have you here. Reading this book, I know it's an absolute blessing to have you here because, dude, you've had a pretty wild life, and your story, and you know, we were just talking with Bird. Your story is absolutely amazing.
Extremely inspirational.
And you know, What the Fire Ignited is probably going to be one of my top books now because there's a hidden message in there, and we're going to get through it, get to it a little bit later. But I kind of want Shay to kind of talk about, you know, introduce himself, tell us what you're kind of doing now and where you're at, and we're going to roll from there, man. Thank you for joining us, brother.
Well, absolutely. It's an honor to be here with you guys and you know, with your entire audience. I feel honored just to be on this earth. You know, it's what you described. Happened August 4th, 1982, you know, consider myself then just a normal 8-year-old kid, did well in school, straight A student, played sports, went to church, loved Jesus, you know, for all intents and purposes, I was the perfect child. But I think one of the things that sinks in with me, especially as a father of five now, four of mine have reached, you know, the age of eight, and with every one of them, I always wondered, you know, would the same fate happen to them? It's so much that happens in this world that has a lasting impact. It's outside of our control.
Right.
Right. We spend all our time focusing on things that we can control, but it's the things outside of our control that really change our entire life trajectory.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's one of the things that you got to do with your kids. It's like, hey, when those things do happen and they're life altering, how are you going to react? Are you going to play the victim card, ask people to feel sorry for you, or are you going to make the most of a bad situation, play the cards you've been dealt, and get after it? And, you know, I was fortunate enough that that was the path I went down. You know, I think a lot of it was based on faith, my parents pushing me, and just honestly, I know you guys have seen your share of it, but as I looked around the ICU ward, I was in the Shriners Children's Hospital back then. You see all these other burned kids, and I was like, you know, this is not the life I want.
Right.
I don't want to be known as a burn kid, a burn survivor. Like, I want to be known as an athlete. That's what I was before the fire, and I didn't want to let this change that. And so once I got out, you know, I kind of made a promise with God lying in that hospital bed for those 2 months that, hey, if you get me out of here, I promise I'm going to spend every waking moment reclaiming my abilities and making the most of it. And so that's what I've done. Athletics has always been an avenue for me to kind of escape, you know, that trauma as an 8-year-old. I didn't want it to define me. I've been pretty fortunate to have success over the years in sports and just try to share that joy with others.
No, I think this entire book is a true testament to that. You know, you're talking about you don't want to be known as a burn survivor, and you do talk about that in the book. But, you know, one of my favorite things is when you're training with Knoxville icon Ace Miller, you know, about being a great competitor. You know, these athletes get punched in the mouth and everything goes out the window. People like you, that gets you fired up. You know, you attacked everything head on, you know, given your circumstance. You know, everything that's been thrown at you in life, you turned it into a positive somehow.
And from a young age, too.
Yeah, you know, and the thing, at the very beginning of the book, reading, like any other, you know, young kid, you were afraid that you were going to be in trouble with your parents because of something that you did not do. But you knew that this was a huge issue that happened. And your first instinct and fear, other than putting you and your friend out, you and Jeff out, is your mom was initially mad, and y'all were fearful of that. And I mean, it to me as a kid, that, you know, that sucks. Like, you know, I go back to my son and I sit there and think, if this happened to him, not just the fear that he's experiencing, but I don't want him to think that I'm disappointed in him. And in your parents, man, they are absolute warriors. I've really enjoyed just listening to your mom. She's sounds like she's an absolute angel and a saint, you know, overcoming her fears, especially, you know, the claustrophobia and flying and going to Cincinnati with you on her own and basically upending y'all's life in Atlanta, correct? And then just moving to Cincinnati for several months while your dad had to stay home and work, man. That is, That's huge. We're, you know, this isn't 2022 where we have these modern advances, especially with some of the programs that we offer. They didn't have that back then. And then you talk about some of the care as a kid going through the Shriners, the debridement process, you know, listening to the screams. Y'all knew when it was going to happen. And the hour leading up, I remember you talking about the fear that just went through your mind and your body. I can't comprehend it. I really cannot.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think now we're so used to hearing about kids being put in induced comas. You get morphine. You have opioid addictions.
Right.
You know, in 1982, the belief was if you were screaming, your lungs were healthy.
Right.
And so they didn't try to suppress that. The strongest thing we got for pain was extra strength Tylenol.
When I read that, that golly.
Yeah, I mean, they amputated most of my right ear while I was awake with a pair of scissors saying, hey, this is dead tissue. And they'd come by and snip a piece of it off till it quit till it was bleeding. Then they're like, okay, now we've reached healthy tissue. We'll keep monitoring it.
Yeah.
And some people say, God, that's horrible. I can't believe you went through it. And I said, tell me how I've suffered.
Yep.
You know, now I just broke my collarbone Monday. I had a plate put in it Tuesday. I haven't taken a single pain medicine. Everything that I've endured has prepared me for something bigger. You know, I don't have an opioid addiction.
Yeah.
All these people now, anytime they have a surgery, they're hooked on opioids.
Yeah.
I never have to worry about it. You know, I tell the doc, look, don't give me pain meds. I don't need it. So that's where I look at the silver lining and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty hard as an 8-year-old kid going through that stuff. But it just prepares you later in life. And you realize so much of what we consider pain, most of it's discomfort.
Right.
And if you can just push through it, I'm always like, look, give it 48 hours. It's amazing how much things change in 48 hours. And then when you reach that window, you say, all right, another 48 hours, I'm okay. And if you keep going through that time window, the pain becomes a non-issue.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here, you know, I'm going back through the book right here. You know, you're talking about the debridement process and just how painful it was, you know. I'm still, man, I mean, I know pain's an issue, and this kind of, like you said, it prepared you for later in life. You know, you became a fairly successful high school wrestler. You gave your try at baseball, football.
And one of the skateboarding.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the stories that I love the most is that you played a baseball game with a broken, wrist that your dad never knew about.
Talk about pain management.
Right.
Yeah, I was scared to tell him, because he specifically said, don't ride your skateboard the day of games. And, of course, I rode it, fell, broke my left wrist.
Right.
And so he knew in warm-ups something was wrong, and I asked him if I could bat left-handed because my arm was sore. And even he will tell you he was surprised I got a hit because I bat left-handed because I had broken my arm. But, you know, you just kind of get through it. I think there's so many things in life we put these limits on ourselves saying what we can and can't do without really testing it. You know, somebody tells you, hey, you can't do this, and you just accept it. You know, the doctors told me in 1982, I'd never play competitive sports again. Right. And that was mainly because my right arm was melted to my body. It took 3 years to lift over my head. I had to learn how to write left-handed just to finish third grade. I still have no nerves, no sweat glands in a third of my body. But it doesn't preclude me from participating. It makes it more challenging.
Right.
But I think that's what people do. They look for excuses why they can't do something.
Right.
As opposed to reasons and, hey, these are things I'm better prepared for. And, you know, you alluded to the wrestling. One of the things I realized was the burns changed my body. You know, I no longer had the ability to compete in sports that required finesse or touch. But, man, if there was a sport that required all-out effort, last man standing, whoever could inflict the most pain and take it wins, those are sports I did well in. You know, I boxed, I wrestled, got into a little sport called Ironman the past 13 years, and I've done pretty well in these sports. And it was never because I was a good athlete. You know, you mentioned A's, and that was his comment. He goes, SQ, you're not a good athlete. I'm going to just be honest with you. But you're one hell of a competitor. And he goes, I'll take that any day of the week. And that's what you realize. It's grit. It's the tenacity. It's, hey, I'll do whatever it freaking takes to win. You're going to have to freaking kill me to beat me. Those are the people that you want on your team. Those are the ones that rise to the top.
Right.
You know, the other athletes, they do well when everything's perfect. It's a nice sunny day. You know what the conditions are.
Yep.
But when the shit hits the fan, you want the people that had to work just to be out there on the field with.
Yeah,
I've always appreciated, you know, I was reading the book, I felt like the underlying tone for this was perseverance.
Yeah, and I love the segments of the Ironman segments that you kind of open stories up with. I mean, it really shows that, you know, getting through those little moments is, you know, it's just one step at a time, and just really barreling through was really incredible.
You know, I think one of the things too, it's if you kind of just embrace, look. Life's going to throw you curveballs throughout. It's not one event. It's not, hey, you got burned today. The rest of your life's going to be great. You overcame it. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. Once you understand, look, you're going to be continually tested, and it's not if, it's when, and you're ready for it. I think that's the difference, right? Like, I know Ironman racing, just in life in general, as a father, something's going to happen almost every single day, you know? And so when it happens, we don't panic. We don't say, oh, man, now what do we do? My first, you know, thought is, hey, I prepared for this.
Right.
And then you start thinking through, all right, here's what I need to do. Right. You don't freak out. And I think that's where most people go wrong, is they train and prepare for life as if things are perfect. Mm-hmm. They don't prepare if everything goes wrong, then what?
Right. Yeah.
And I think if you have that mental fortitude to know that, hey, no matter how bad it gets, I'm always going to survive. Life's pretty easy. You know, I tell people, I said, look, as an 8-year-old, when you go through this, you realize I can do some pretty hard shit.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot for you to beat me down. And you better be ready for that, right? Like, once you've been through that, nothing scares you. And what I tell people, it's within all of us. Most of us just haven't been put in that situation that we were forced to tap into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we had to voluntarily start introducing stress into our life to allow us to tap into it.
Yeah.
Because once you do, man, it's empowering.
You know,
the whole world looks completely different. All these things you thought were impossible.
Yeah.
Are possible. You just got to work a little harder and a little bit differently for it.
You know, and that's what I love about, I have it highlighted right here, you know, you're talking about the Ironman. In these moments, you must stay calm, put one foot in front of the other, and never give up. Never. And, you know, I think that's a true testament to that. You know, even in the fire service, one of the things that we try to do, and especially with younger guys who are not, you know, as well seasoned, you know, in the job, is adding those elements of stressors to the training, so that stress inoculation training. So then when we hit these certain things, how do you overcome? How do you persevere? How do you push through? When shit is at absolute rock bottom, you have that backup. You have that drive that's inside you. It's that fight or flight experience, right? You're going to do what's best for you. You're going to survive. You're going to do it for your family. You're going to do it for whoever in the fire service that maybe you're working with, or you're the brothers that you're riding with. But for you, you're going to take that next step. No one is going to tell you no. No one's going to tell me no. Because if you tell me no, guess what? It's on. I'm going to prove you wrong.
100%.
And I think that's what I love about your message, is that don't ever accept no. Never let anyone dictate what you can do. Prove every damn naysayer wrong. Push forward. Find that fortitude you have in you and make something happen.
Well, if I took no as an answer, I wouldn't have 5 kids and married 19 years.
No. You're right. You're right.
Right. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, that's what's always motivated me. You know, I mean, small kid, you know, I'm 5'7", 145 pounds. You know, my goal is to be built like a 12-year-old in life. But I've always been that underdog. And with that comes that mindset that, look, I realized I've got a unique set of skills.
Yeah.
And that really comes out when the shit hits the fan. Because you realize when things get hard, other people peel off the course, you know? I don't know. I mean, to me, that's one of the things that's like, how do you teach that?
Yeah, I was actually just wanted to kind of touch on that. You know, there, I I believe there are people who are really built like yourself and like Birdman, for instance, you know, the SEAL mindset that, you know, overcoming this stuff is there's no option. And then there's other people who, you know, may not have that internal, you know, mechanism to turn off their brain when the pain starts. And it's like, how do you teach, you know, how do you put that fight flight, you know, mechanism really into them where there is no flight, there's only fight. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you really drill down into somebody? Because I fully believe that, no, you know, we have a society that's very, you know, give me my Xanax for my anxiety. You know,
times are tough. I need help.
I need my space. Yeah. I'm so glad that the pandemic started so I can sit in my bedroom and not talk to anybody because people make me nervous, kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I've experienced some of that in my past, but it's like, you know, at a certain point, there's how do you teach that personality switch? You know, because some guys will go out there and tell you, well, just do it. You know, just do it. And they're, unfortunately, there are people that aren't built like that, but I do believe that everybody has it in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do you retool, and what can you say to people to really get them to, you know, to shift perspective?
Yeah. You know, I mean, for me, there's a lot of things. You know, one of the things people ask about, especially with kids, like, how do you teach your kids? And I can tell you each one of mine's completely different, but we do a lot of little things. For instance, every Friday when we go eat dinner, we stop quarter mile from home and I make all the kids get out and run home.
Nice.
I love that.
You know, and they're not always excited about it. And sometimes they'll cry about it. Dad, I don't feel good. Like, I've made them run home in flip flops. What was coming. Take them off and run barefoot. I don't care, but getting back in the van is not an option.
I'll
see you at home. There's little things like that. You know, when we're in the car and it's 15 degrees outside, we roll the windows down and play freeze out. And we make games of it. You know, you wait to see who's the first one crying, but that doesn't mean you roll the window up, but it's a game to see who can hold out.
Yeah.
It's just, we do constant things like that in the house. We do plank challenges. You know, like my son the other day said, Dad, I want some popcorn. I said, what are you willing to do to get it? I said, all right, I'll tell you what. You got to crank out 200 push-ups in 3 minutes. Go.
So savage, boy.
Yeah.
Right? So it's little things like that. He's like, I said, do you want the popcorn or not? And so he got down and did it. So those are little things that we do to kind of make our kids tough.
Yeah.
But I'm also, like, I've got friends that I know wouldn't voluntarily sign up for stuff. So I just say, hey, why don't you join me? Got this nice little trip plan. You can't tell them everything. Like, my wife, she freaking hates it, you know, because the last time I did it, we had all the kids and we wind up hiking 4 miles in snow with just tennis shoes on.
I
knew if I told her it was snowing where we were going, she wouldn't want to do it. And so once we show up there, everybody's in ski outfits and snowshoes. She goes, are you freaking kidding me? We're in blue jeans and tennis shoes.
Oh, man.
I said, well, look, babe, if you want to tell the kids we can't do it, we can leave. That's fine. She's like, you're an asshole.
Oh, my gosh.
But we had an amazing trip, right? But I think that's what you got to do. You can't give people the option, say, here's how tough it's going to be. Just say, hey, look, we're going to do this nice little trip. Man, we're going to have a great time.
Right.
And once you get people into it, it's hard to turn back, right? And you say, look, all we can do is go forward. You know, if you turn around now, it's going to be twice as hard.
Well, and there, I think there's a misconception amongst people that, you know, well, if I try something really hard, it's just really going to hurt. But they don't understand the accomplishment and the real gratitude and feeling that comes out on the other end. Like, some of my greatest moments, you know, just being alive are, you know, just overcoming great adversity, you know, whether it's, you know, freezing my ass off during a hunting trip and really wanting to go back inside and then picking off the one that I wanted to get. It's like, man, I'm glad I froze my butt off and nearly lost a finger, but I got it. And, you know, they focus so much on that. Well, it's super difficult and I'm going to feel like shit while I'm doing it. And I really don't want to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not the expression of the other side.
And I think that's where it helps if you've got somebody with you on that journey to talk you through it, right? Like my daughter, man, she's tough as nails. And I know what motivates her. Like she was running cross country. She's supposed to go run. She goes, Dad, I don't want to run. She's literally almost crying about it. And I said, okay. I said, let's go run anyway. We'll take it easy. I ran every hill in the neighborhood with her. And as we're running, she says, Dad, how much further? I said, babe, the top's right there. Just keep going.
Yeah.
10 more seconds. You can do anything for 10 seconds.
Yep.
Literally, she's at tears at the end of it. And we're talking the whole time. She goes, Dad, I'm going to die. I said, you feel that pain? No, when you feel that, you're not dead. The fact you're talking to me tells me you're okay. So if you feel this, no, you've got a little bit extra to get. And when we finished, it was her fastest split she's ever ran.
Wow.
And I said, babe, we just ran every hill in the neighborhood after you told me you couldn't run, period.
Yeah.
But it was just getting her out of her mind, right? And she won the next cross country meet.
That's awesome.
But it was being able to talk her through and say, hey, when you feel that pain, that's when you know you're doing it, right? That's what it's going to feel like. And that's okay. Don't panic. And I think that's what happens. Some people, as soon as they feel that discomfort, their immediate reaction is to shut down.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I love getting people to use heart rate monitors just to kind of reaffirm them, hey, look, I know you're feeling a pain, but look at that number. That number says you got a little bit more left.
Right.
Right? Let's take your mind out of it. But one of the things I like to do, too, is to get people, all right, if you're going to do a workout, you got to commit to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's 10 o'clock at night and you're tired, you've had a long day, that's the best time to go do it.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, there's many nights at 10 o'clock, I'll go down and run 18 miles on the treadmill. And it freaking sucked. I hated almost every minute of it. But I would remind myself as I'm running, guess what? You're doing something 99% of the people in the world would never do. And because of that, you're going to be the top 1%.
Right.
There you go.
Everybody else is comfortable laying in your bed. How does this feel? And man, it just energized me. No, hey, look, I chose this, right? I could be at home sleeping, but I'm freaking cranking out 18 miles, 10 o'clock at night.
You know, that's,
and you start tapping into that stuff, right? When you get into a race or life or any kind of situation, you said, hey, remember those workouts late at night?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I've got this. This is what it, I know what this feels like. I know how this story ends. Keep pushing.
You know, that's why I've always gravitated myself towards people that have suffered through adversity. Cause you see their heart, you see their grit, you know, they know, like you said, that pain is just telling you, you got more to give.
Yeah.
You're not dead yet, you know? And I think those people who have suffered through adversity in life, whether it be financial, emotional, spiritual, whatever you want to, whatever it may be, you know, they understand the importance of a small victory. Like you said, you can run 10 more seconds. Let's get to the top. Okay, what's next? Let's go 10 more seconds. Let's get up there a little bit further. Every small victory, it piles into a bigger victory. And I think that with not just America, I think it's the world in general, we've got to revert that mindset. You know, we have got to change that mindset. You know, I've got to take the next step. I get guys that ask me all the time, why do you get up at 4:30 in the morning and go work out every morning? Mine is, I want to see my kids longer in my life.
There you go.
And that's what I do. They're like, well, aren't you tired? I go, shit, yeah, I'm tired.
Yep.
I'm dead at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But guess what? I get home at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and I see my kids. Man, that's a win. Yep. I'm going to get up at 4:30 the next morning. I'm going to do it again. Yep. I'm going to do it again. And I keep doing it. And everybody's like, well, why are you eating differently now? Because I want to see my kids.
Yeah.
I want to feel better. I want to do what's right for me. You know, find the small victories. And like you said, just push yourself.
Well, when keep they want pushing. To play, I want to have that energy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No shit. Yeah. I need that energy with them all.
Well, and for me, it's, I want to be the kind of dad they're proud of. I want to be the dad that can take his shirt off at the pool.
Yeah.
I want to be the dad that they're going to spend half their teenage years trying to beat because I'm never going to let them win.
Yep.
Right? Like, I wrestle my boys. I crush them. I said, look, when you beat me, no, you've earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to let you win. You know, I will pull your ear, break, you know, whatever it takes.
Yep.
I'm going to harden you up, but you will know that you've earned it.
You know, that's my dad and I had a bet for $100 when by the time I turned 18, I was going to whoop him in an arm wrestling contest. And as soon as I turned 18, I said, "You want a challenge?" He goes, "No, you win." I was like, "Yeah."
But I think that's it. You know, but one of the things I tell everybody, it's one thing to say it as a parent, but it's another thing to model the behavior.
Yeah.
So when my kids get up at 6, they're like, "Man, Dad's been working out for an hour and a half hard."
Mm-hmm.
So they just think that's normal.
Yeah.
They think it's normal for a dad to do a 3-hour workout on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And so my little 7-year-old daughter, she's always wanted to work out with me. Like, she'll get on the treadmill while I'm riding my bike.
That's so awesome.
And that's the difference, right? So many parents tell their kids, "Hey, you need to do this," yep. And then they're overweight or whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you feel that strongly, do it to yourself, and the kids will want to emulate what you're doing.
110%.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that kind of goes back to the Shriners motto. You can do it. We're not here to take care of you.
I love
100%.
That.
100%.
I'm like, when I read that, I literally read it 4 or 5 times. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, it's a place like, "Hey, we're here to take care of you." No, we're not. You can do this.
Well, you're not talking to regular people. You're talking to people who've been injured like that. To instill that sort of mindset in you as an injured individual, I mean, I thought was, it's like, once you read it, you're like, well, yeah, that, you know, because the person's going to have to live on their own eventually. And yep. If you coddle and take care of them now, you know, that's not teaching them anything. That's not allowing them to grow out of this situation.
Well, think of Zach Sutterfield, you know, we just had on our show back in December, mm-hmm. Burned over almost, I forget what the percentage was, but he's lost
over 90.
Yeah. Two amputations.
Lost both of his hands.
Both hands.
In his head whenever he jumped out of a 2-story window. His building was set on fire. 20 years old?
Yeah, so he suffers from TBI, and he's having to relearn how to be an adult right now. And he's, oh my God, he's
an amazing kid.
I feel like a piece of crap, I swear to God, because that dude has overcome everything in life. His parents, you know, they stand by him. They don't coddle him.
No.
They force him to do the stuff that he's supposed to do. And it's just people like Zach and then your backstory, you know, and the way you're dealing with your kids now, that's what this is supposed to be. That's how we're supposed to live. We're supposed to push each other and challenge each other every single damn day of our life.
Well, it's funny because when we talk about this, like, we all agree, but then we're judged by our peers. Like,
yes.
Oh my God, you're a horrible parent. I'm like, hey, my job's to prepare my kids for the challenges of life. Like, I tell my kids daily, life's not fair. Get over it.
Yep.
It's going to be hard. You know, we don't tell them things will work out. Everybody's going to do stuff. And so I think the more you can do to inject adversity into their life and teach them how to overcome it, the better we're preparing them.
Yeah.
100% agree.
Well, and you know, I've heard parents say things like that about parents who have their kids face adversity. And all I can think is, when shit hits the fan, do you want your child to have the best tools in their toolbox to get through that? Or do you want them to curl up in a ball and not be able to get over their fear and make it debilitating? Because you have, yep. You have two options. You can coddle your way through through their childhood. And then whenever they get into that real world, it's going to be a rude awakening. And it's going, you know, God willing, they have, you know, they have strong fortitude and they can get through it. But most likely they're going to curl up in a ball and they won't know what the hell to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I'm a huge believer in is the things that you read and watch. You're training your brain how to react when things go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right. And like, so all I read is nonfiction. And it's always books about adversity, something happening, whether it's Ernest Shackleton, right, being stuck in Antarctica. You name it. Because I want my brain to be trained that, look, when stuff goes wrong, our first reaction is, I got it.
Yeah.
Here's the story where this happened to so-and-so. Like, I don't read stories about people dying from cancer. And it's not because I don't believe in it. It's not because I think it doesn't happen. But I don't want my brain to think, hey, if we get this horrible disease, death is what awaits us,
mm-hmm.
right? So I just focus strictly on stories of overcoming adversity, and I expose my kids to those same stories. I said, look, I want y'all to read these things to see, hey, you know, a buddy of mine's a double amputee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Horrific. He lost it in the Alaskan wilderness, but he's now the world record holder for a marathon, a double amputee, 2-hour, 35-minute marathon.
Golly.
Think about that, right? And so I share with my kids these stories, say, hey, look, just because trauma happens doesn't mean your life's over. Look at these people living their best life even after these horrible accidents happen. And I think that's what you got to do from an early age is train kids, hey, stuff's going to happen, mm-hmm. right? It could very well happen to you. And when it does, we're not giving up. We just may shift to a different sport or activity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to read right real quick. October 12, 2012, the Ironman World Championship. And I think that you've highlighted this extremely well. Landon and I have talked about this for a little bit. But that was you ran your fastest marathon split in an Ironman race, 3 hours and 41 minutes. And your official finish time, which you have 17 hours, correct, to finish at,
right.
10 hours, 45 minutes. 49 seconds, and you write a respectful time. Like, get out of here, man. But I love what you write after that, and I'm going to read this part. Like I said, I'm going to encourage you guys. We'll put the link on maybe on the Sons of the Flag Facebook page this, to the book.
We'll put a link to the book.
I'm telling you, it's a good read. It's game changing. I'm in love with this thing.
Yeah.
So as I undressed to go to bed that night, I surveyed the damage of the race on my body. I was peeing blood. And my skin felt like it was about to peel off. I was severely sunburned from nearly 11 hours in the lava fields. I was advised not to use sunblock as it would make my sweating issue even worse. Because you can only sweat out of a third of your body, correct?
Right.
The bottoms of my feet were covered in blisters. The excessive sweating also caused every square inch of my body in contact with another piece of skin to rub raw. I thought I had carefully applied body chafing cream to everything. But unfortunately, the skin was even rubbed raw on both testicles, the back of my neck, both armpits, and part of my butt. Yet, I felt it was all completely worth it.
100%. Do it again.
I have stars and tabs and everything on that little section. That a respectful time.
Respectful time.
I'm hung up on it, man.
That made me smile. Pretty big. It's like, because the mindset of it, just the mindset of like, well, could do better next time. It's like, all right.
Yeah. No, I think that's like a true testament. Like you said, everything we've been talking about, you got to train your mind right. You've got to overcome. When you hit that trauma or trauma happens, you don't let it dictate you. You're suffering. I think you're suffering just as much as, I mean, I've never been burned to your extent, but that sounds like you're suffering pretty extensively just in that conversation. And then the events leading up to it about the cramping, about going through the lava fields, and then, you know, we were both very impressed about you, your bathroom issues. You know, we were really impressed by that. But overcoming every single obstacle that was put before you during that race, I mean, I think every event in life led you up to that moment. Obviously, your wife and kids and your mom and dad. But that is a true testament to your will and your tenacity and your overall, you know, determination to never be defined, you know, especially as a burn survivor. You're a warrior. That's your definition to me as a warrior.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's like when you have these kind of opportunities, you don't want any regrets, right? So I spent solid 7 months training for it. I was already in good shape anyway, but I spent 5 months doing a sweat study.
Mm-hmm.
Where I weighed myself 5 times a day, every day for 5 months straight. I measured how much I urinated, the intake, you name it. And so I had calculated with the dietitian's help, I sweat out 5 pounds every hour during that almost 11-hour race.
Holy crap.
And then so people don't realize, so for me to even finish it, I had to train my gut to process 1.5 liters of fluid every hour for 10 hours straight.
Yeah.
So try that sometime.
Oh,
it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then I also had to take in 2,400 milligrams of sodium every hour. And so these are all these things that I have to do special to make up for the inability to sweat, and where I can sweat, I overcompensate. But I just want to know, hey, I'm doing everything I can to have the best race experience possible.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what the time is, you're happy with it because you know, hey, look, I did my best, right? Everything else took care of itself. So I just feel fortunate in those kind of events just to experience all of it. You know, the pain is just another sign that, hey, look, you gave it everything you had. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the little hidden trophy that you never get. Yeah. Nobody can take that away from you, right? And it's one of those, like, when you feel that pain, like, I talk to it. Hey, I feel you. I got you, buddy. You know, and you sometimes you can even talk the cramps out of your body. It depends on how bad it are, how bad they are.
Yeah, your book, you know, going through, you talk about a lot of encouragement. You know, you were encouraging others as you passed them along the way. Mm-hmm. When you decided to sign up for your first Ironman or triathlon, how did you make your mind? Because that was a new realm. Obviously, you wrestled and
boxed.
You know, you boxed in college for a little bit.
What was the steps that you took to get to this? And where was the mindset?
Yeah.
And what inside you said, I want to challenge the hell out of myself.
And there's no turning back.
Yeah. So 2008, I was working in a big high rise downtown Atlanta. And every day I'd go down and work out at the gym. And was focused on the gun show, right? A lot of curls, mm-hmm. bench press. Just wanted to look good in the t-shirt.
Right.
I was 33 at the time. 34. This 65-year-old man comes up to me. Big barrel-chested, flat top. He goes, hey, tough guy. I said, you talking to me? He goes, yeah, I'm talking to you. He goes, why don't you come in here, my little boot camp class, just me and a bunch of ladies. Shouldn't be anything for a guy like you with all your muscles.
Damn,
so for perspective, what? You know, I told you I'm 145 now. I was 187, 188 then.
Oof.
And it wasn't 100% muscle, but still pretty thick. And so I was like, whatever, old timer. So I go in there. Sure enough, it's all women. First 10 minutes, I'm in tears because all we're doing is core, leg lifts, planks, the stuff that I have not been working on. Finally, the last 10 minutes, he says, all right, we're going to do 4-count push-ups. I'm like, all right, I'm going to bury this dude. He doesn't know who he's messed with. He drops down beside me and he's yelling out, 1, 2, 3, 1, 1, 2, 3, 2. And he goes, pick it up, SQ. And I couldn't keep up. And then he goes, SQ, ponytails is kicking your butt. Come on, boy. I couldn't respond. All I could say was, yes, sir. I went home and told my wife, I said, I got my ass kicked today by a 65-year-old man. I said, this shit's on. I said, he doesn't know who he's messing with.
Oh, man. So.
So what I found out was this guy was one of the original Ironmen from 1978.
Okay.
Was a Marine drill sergeant, was running 8 to 10 miles a day. So I got back into fighting shape. I lost probably 20 pounds the next 2 months.
Wow.
Doing his class. During that time, he got diagnosed stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Mm. Over time, we became really close. He did chemo. He did the Whipple procedure, you name it. But after a year, just he couldn't, you know, his body was done.
Yeah.
And so right before he passed, a group of us said, hey, Henry, we're going to do the next big triathlon in your honor. We don't care the distance. And so that happened to be a half Ironman. I didn't own a bike, didn't know how to swim. You know, I'd played Marco Polo in the kids' pool, but never swam laps. Hadn't ran since high school. And so we had 4 months to get ready for it. I bought a $500 bike on Craigslist, just started running based off what I thought I needed to do, took some swim lessons, and finished the race pretty respectfully. It was like 5 hours, 38 minutes for a half Ironman. And that night, we're all celebrating. Somebody's like, let's do the same race twice, 4 months from now. So I went home, signed up for it. Nobody else did.
Yeah.
It happened to be the full Ironman. And as luck has it, the day before the race, I ran into Henry. That's the Marines drill sergeant. I ran into his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Shay, Daddy's going to be watching you tomorrow. I said, yeah, I know. She goes, no, you know this is the 1-year anniversary of Daddy passing.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes.
No clue. Again, I just kind of went with the spirit. Like, I really believe things happen that God has orchestrated. He puts people in your life at the right time. And,
yep.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's what it was with Henry. Finished the race, 10 hours, 31 minutes, and was kind of hooked. I was like, man, maybe this is my sport. I finished second in the next race I did and been doing it since. Now we've done 42 Ironmans and half Ironmans. I've raced on 6 continents now. So the only one left is Antarctica, which they don't offer a race yet.
Yes.
Hopefully I can get that done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just put everything into perspective real quick for our listeners. Those who do not know what the Ironman truly is, it's a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike ride, and a 26.2-mile marathon run, all to be completed under 17 hours. And in the Ironman, there's, 2,400 spots with 90,000 athletes trying to get in.
Sheesh.
So that tells you the level of competition that Shea was always up against. That's pretty over. I mean, pretty
that's
overwhelming.
Pretty overwhelming.
Yeah. It's hard to wrap my head around on that.
That is a really fascinating story too. Being kind of a gym rat myself, I know what it's like. You go in there, you see the guys that are just bulking and pumping, and you know, and it's fun. I love doing it. And then to be asked to go into a room, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna knock all these people out. And then just 20 minutes later, you're like, well, hell, I think I met a match that I need to conquer again.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, nobody cares how much I can bench press.
No.
It's how many times can I lift 10 pounds, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's very humbling, you know, and it just opens your eyes to a whole different world. Like I tell everybody, just go exercise 7 hours straight. And then say, all right, now I'm going to go run a marathon for time. You know?
Holy.
You know, so just kind of think about that. And to think, hey, while I'm doing all that, I got to eat, drink, go to the bathroom, all of this, and I'm doing it for time.
Yeah.
Right? And that's one of the things that, you know, I wrote about last week is one of the things that helped me finish second in that next race was learning how to pee on yourself while you're bike riding.
Yeah.
People are like, I can't believe you do that. I was like, are you kidding? If I can shave anywhere from 2 to 4 minutes, I mean, that's the difference between making the podium and not making the podium.
That's that competitive edge right there.
Yeah.
God, right? Boy. You know.
And of course. So.
No, yeah. No, I kind of want to talk to you a little bit how you became involved with us over here at Sons of the Flag. I mean, obviously, you suffered burn. I'm not going to say you're a burn survivor, but you did suffer a traumatic issue. You've gone through multiple surgeries as a kid in college. You know, the story about what you gained 2 inches in your arm and then your neck from this, you know.
And hearing about the indention and then the doctor who didn't do what you liked.
Took skin from places
that he shouldn't have. I mean, so you've been up and down the block and around it and probably flipped it on its head.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. I think all in all, I've had over 40 surgeries now. Probably 30 of them are burn related. But it's interesting. Again, I keep talking about God just kind of puts people in your life at the right time. Through LinkedIn, I became friends with a guy named Ryan Hyman,
mm-hmm.
who's good friends with Bird. And I believe he might even be on your foundation board.
Yes. Yep.
Yep.
And Hyman's like, dude, I got to hook you up with Birdman. Like, you guys are going to hit it off. Like, you guys are so wired alike. So we connected, and Bird was telling me about the foundation. He's like, man, we need to get you in to see one of my doctors. And so this was in the height of COVID mm-hmm. when all this was going on. We did a telehealth visit. And then October last year, I was like, you know what? I need to just go ahead and get this big surgery done. I've been putting this one off because I know it's going to be pretty extensive. It's like, let me get through my racing season, and then I'm going to do it. And I'm going to commit 2 months just to recover from the surgery, then build back up. And so, I was able to race in Israel in November, and then had surgery through Sons of the Flag down at USF in January. And basically, they did what's called a skin flap. So, they took a section out of my back probably about 8 by 4 inches. And it was the skin, fatty tissue, and the blood vessels.
Mm.
And then they cut my neck and it split open. And they also removed a lot of the burned tissue and then sewed in this good skin from my back into the blood vessels. So now this skin will not contract. Like, I've had a ton of skin grafts over the years.
Right.
My last one shrank 65%.
Holy cow.
Right? So this won't shrink because it's real skin with its own blood supply. And so I went through this procedure. It's a 10-hour surgery. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Right? It's definitely the most complicated I've ever had. The surgeon's like, everything went perfect. You were in good shape. That really contributed to this. And then 7 weeks later, I'm bike riding with my dog in the park, and his leash catches a pole, throws me on my neck. I snapped my collarbone, had to get a plate put in. Luckily, it didn't impact the graft.
Good.
It was right below it. Not a single scratch on me, which is crazy. But it snapped my collarbone pretty good where they had to do immediate surgery. So that was fun. You know, I was like, dude, you're not going to believe how bad of luck this is. He's like, dude, if I got to bubble wrap you.
Yeah. Well, you describe yourself as the 1%, right? If something's going to happen, it's going to be you.
Like, what are the chances? You know, I mean, it's – and I get it. A lot of times we put ourselves in these situations, right? But, you know, being that 1%, you also get to experience the joys that 1% experience.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's always a trade-off.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell everybody, like, if you're one of those people that the moment something bad happens, you say, God, why me? Or are you the first one when something amazing happens, you say, God, why me?
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to blame people for the stuff when things happen bad, well, give them credit right away when the good things happen.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you can't fully – one of the themes that I kind of gathered from your book, you know, just personally was, you know, yeah, there's – it seems like strings of bad luck and, you know, some bad things happen and stuff, but it's like you can't fully experience life unless you're willing to let some bad things happen, unless you're willing to accept that shit is going to come down the pipe and sometimes it's I'm going to get covered in it.
Embrace
but
your suffering.
There's so much more that I've experienced that's beautiful and that's wonderful and that's fulfilling because I've been through and I've accepted that there's going to be some shit that comes along with it.
100%. You know, I feel like every scar on my body has a story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the stuff does happen, I keep saying, look, I know you're preparing me for something bigger and better.
Mm-hmm.
Once I heal up, imagine what else I can do now. Right.
Yeah. Rock and roll.
This is in my toolkit. I can say, hey, look, I just beat this. Right.
Yeah. I love that, Mike. We've doted on you a bit because, you know, we just got done with your book, but I absolutely love that mindset. And I mean, I'm not a big motivational book reader, but whenever I read this one, I was like, man, that, you know, I think things like this help people like me. You know, I'm not a firefighter. I'm not a military guy. I'm just a civilian. You know, my hardships have been more or less minimal, but, you know, it makes you really want to go face the world and, you know, any of the small things that are bothering you, it really, you know, it kind of, you know, not to use a bad pun, but it burns them away and it takes it off and it makes you really want to reevaluate.
And this is not a self-help. This is a get off your ass and do something with yourself because you haven't done shit
this
in your life.
You have to help yourself.
Yes.
Like, yep. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of one of my rules. People always reach out. Hey man, will you help me? I said, look, I'll help you, but here's how it works. I'm going to tell you some things to do. The moment you quit doing it, we're done.
Yeah.
Because my time is one of my most valuable assets.
Yep.
And I'm giving freely to you. So don't waste it. You know, and there's a lot of people, they get pissed. Well, hey, I'm sorry. It's like, I don't want to hear it. You know, you knew the rules and you broke them.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I'm also one of those, I'm not the most compassionate person. And so when people start telling me, you know, hey, this hurts, this does this, I said, listen, it's not that I'm minimalizing. It's just I've seen so many people go through some crazy stuff. Like, I know you can dig deeper.
You're allowing it to define you.
Right? So let me share with you somebody else's story. Maybe you can find some strength in what they went through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't ever want to try to compare pains. whether it's mental, physical, spiritual, right? We're all going through something. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want you here to say, hey, this is taken over.
Right.
You can acknowledge it exists. It's hard. I get that. But realize other people have trained it, overcome it, and then achieved amazing things despite of it. And so that's what I try to get people to tap into.
Mm-hmm. You know.
You know, and I think one of the things is people just assume things are better now. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, that was pretty horrible, all that stuff you went through. I said, dude, there's not a single day I've woken up in 40 years where I wasn't in pain. It's just some days it's less than others.
Yeah.
You know? And I just accept that's part of life. And so once you accept that, anything that, if it doesn't hurt as bad as yesterday, well, man, that's a blessing.
You know, and I want to go back to the burn care real quick, because you initially were only burned on 33% of your body, roughly.
Right.
And it was because of your surgeries and the healing process and the other complications that it extended to 65%. Is that correct?
Yeah. So now it's probably more than that, but because they had to take the skin from my legs for uh-huh. the donor sites for the skin grafts. But when they did, they accidentally dug them too deep. Oh, and so shit. They became equivalent to third degree burns. And so they had to skin graft to my donor sites.
What?
Good I've never, God.
I've never heard of this ever happening.
1%, man.
But it happened to me. Right?
Wow.
And I think that's truly important to highlight what we're doing here and why we have this mission here is, you know, your story is we've got to push burn care past these yeah. points, right? We you know, we're not going to look back. We're going to keep pressing forward. And I think that's the beautiful thing about Birdman. He's such a driven individual, and then he's got such an amazing group of individuals that are pushing us all forward. That burn care, it sucks, man. It's got to get better, and we're doing things to get better, you know.
And there's so much great technology out there that needs to
– yes.
It that's just not being either embraced or it's difficult to get into the system, and it's like big – unfortunately, because there's not a lot of voices out there. A lot of the burn foundations, you know, they'll help with some surgeries and stuff, but it's primarily to help the family and
yeah.
which they do great work. But the research really needs to, you know, it needs to be promoted.
Yeah. Cut the red tape and let's push forward. I mean, we got to get through it.
And I think, you know, part of it's the mindset too, because for so long it's, hey, we just want to get you back in society.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want that. I want to be a top performer. Don't just put me back and say, here you go. You're now average.
Here's number three. Get back in here.
Right?
You're a person.
I want to be elite. So tell me what we can do so I can be the top, the best. I don't want to always have this excuse, well, you're burned, so now you can't do that. That's not acceptable.
Yep.
No.
So despite of this injury, what can we do that I can be at the top of my game?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it's going to take. And I think there's a ton of great doctors out there willing to do that, and I know that's what Birdman has worked so hard on, is putting this kind of panel together to provide that level of care. Like when I walked into the surgeon, I said, listen, I'm racing May 22nd, so you need to do your job because I plan to start training these dates. And he goes, all right, that'll work.
rock and roll.
You know, we're probably going to have to wrap up here shortly.
Yeah,
but normally I would ask people questions, you know, about you, but I don't want to do that. What I want you to do, you know, leave us with a few words, you know, for the people that are listening. You know, just I think we've really highlighted a lot of amazing topics. You know, how to push yourself past, you know,
well,
that
you know,
point.
And I have something to bounce on that. You know, working with Zach Sutterfield, and mm-hmm. he got to meet the EMT that, you know, help save his life. And we have an audience of firefighters, you know, thousands of firefighters listen to this podcast, and we always like to, you know, kind of bring it together. If somebody's doing some great things and, you know, really has some motivation that can put into them. I know in every single career you can get bogged down, and, you know, on top of what Bemis said, is there something that you can tell the firefighters, you know, just to give them some motivation that what they're doing matters? You know, what it meant for you, the guys that took care of you whenever you were a kid, you know, really to let them know that we're there for them. And that's, you know, what they're doing is valuable for our society. Cause I know they get beat down a lot, and we try to really encourage them over here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely matters. And to me, that's the hardest part of being a firefighter, first responder, is you see us at our worst point in life, right? I mean, we're beaten up, broken, left for dead. Rarely do you get to see us 10, 20, 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key. It's how do you reconnect with those people once they're fully stabilized and back in society? And, you know, I tell people, I don't believe I truly have suffered. Did I go through some horrible crap? Absolutely. But name one thing in life I ever missed out on because of getting burned. I've got an amazing wife, five kids, a great career, successful athletic career. There's not one thing that I couldn't do because of this. Did I have to work three times as hard as everybody else just to be average? Hell yeah, I did. But guess what? It meant 10 times as much to me because I had to work so hard for it. And I think that's what you got to do, is take pride in knowing you're making a freaking difference. You know, these people's lives will be better, not just average, but better. And know that what you're doing will pay off, and it's not something you're going to see immediate. It may be 10 years before you get that thank you, but you still do it because you know you're making an impact.
Man.
Rock and roll.
For me, from that side, thank you. I think that message is going to transcend all audiences that we have. And man, I can't thank you enough for just taking the time out to talk to Landon and I, and just to share your message. You know, not your story, your message.
Yeah.
You know, there's you know, the story is what it is, and your rule number two is never look back, never. And I think that's an extremely important thing to remember, is you never look back. You keep pressing forward. And, brother, I think, you know, you've done that. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to your continued successes. And, you know, I hope that I could see you performing at the highest level. I hope to see your kids, you know, performing at the highest level. I think that's an amazing thing you got going on. And your message to everybody out here is just absolutely beautiful. And so I can't thank you enough for just sitting here and talking to us and just, you know, making me feel better about what we're doing, that I need to pick my shit up in my life and get a little bit more.
I love these conversations.
Get a little bit more after it. And, but man, thank you so much for just taking the time out of your day. I know you got a very busy schedule. You got a lot going on.
We truly appreciate it.
It means more than you know just to sit there and talk with you.
Well, hey, it's the least I can do. And to me, that's what we need, right? We need to talk more.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not alone in this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard, especially as men. We bottle it up and we don't know who will appreciate it.
Right.
But I think just commiserating, hey, look, this shit's hard, right? But that's okay. You know, hard is good. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of comfort in knowing it's not just me, it's other people who are struggling with it too, but hey, we'll get through it. You know, I'm a believer that God never gives us more than we can handle. And if you truly believe that, you can get through anything.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the way I look at it too, is kind of like with what you guys do, it's kind of like raising kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't see the full benefit of parenthood until they reach adulthood. Mm-hmm. Like, you wonder, did all those years really pay off? Everything that I did with them, did it matter, right? And it's rare that you get the thank you or thanks, Dad, that was amazing.
Yeah, man.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
But when you see them back in a part of society, contributing, doing things, like, that's what I wanted right there. I didn't need to thank you. I just need to see you being you and doing your best.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
After this episode, is there any way, if anybody wanted to reach out to you and ask you a couple questions, is there a way that they can reach out to you?
Yeah, they can they can email me inspire@shaysq.com.
Okay.
You know, they can do that through the website too, and it's shaysquew.com.
Perfect.
Then if they want to read the book, you know, it's What the Fire Ignited. You can get it on Amazon or from my website.
So yeah, I bought mine through Amazon.
Yeah,
so
we'll definitely be sharing that link.
Yeah, we're going to post it out and make sure we spread your message. Like I said, I'm hoping somebody reach out to you and they find some value in this conversation, because I've got a lot of tabs, I've got a lot of highlights, and I've got a lot to think about going forward. And again, thank you so much for just taking the time, man. And you know, it's you're a true inspiration, a true warrior. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Guys, I appreciate everything y'all were doing.
Thank you, Shay. We'll talk to you soon.
Brother.
All right, man. Have a great weekend. See you guys.
All right, brother.
See you.
Bye.
Golly, that's awesome.
That was good, man.
You want to talk about, like, kind of mentioned it to him. You want to talk about being able to change your perspective on some stuff. Like,
yeah.
I do like that he said, you know, you can't compare pains.
Mm-mm.
You know, but it is a good way to get some perspective.
Yeah.
You know, my pain isn't the same as somebody else's pain. The way that I'm going to get through it isn't the same as somebody else. But seeing how somebody else did,
yeah.
Seeing how somebody else got through a lot worse pain, it not only helps put your pain into perspective, but it helps you have a little paradigm shift.
No, absolutely. You know, and I want to highlight one of the things that, you know, I figured we would talk about on this. The education side of the message, you know, this is coming from the firefighter side now. The educational aspect of what we teach kids and what we teach the communities is extremely important.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what to do because of a lesson that he learned.
Yeah.
And he was able to save his life and his friend's life. And that doesn't need to go unnoticed. And I think that what I'm trying to say is the fire service as a whole, just like everything else in, you know, government, it gets real quick about trying to mandate stuff.
Yeah.
We cannot mandate stuff. The only thing we can ever do to be successful is to educate.
Yeah.
Education means to go out into your communities, talk to the kids, be present with the kids, be present with families, open the doors of your firehouses and allow them to come in there and spread the message of what it means to be safe. Not playing with lighters, you know, make certain decisions that gasoline's dangerous. Don't play with it. Right. If something does happen, you stop, drop and roll, call 911.
Yeah.
He learned a lesson that I think saved his life.
Yeah, and his friends.
And his friend's life. Yeah. And I think that's a very, very, very valuable point that we need to reiterate, that the fire service cannot mandate. We can only educate.
And it was caused by a lesson that wasn't learned on the other side, unfortunately.
Correct.
With the young girl, you know, I needle my mom about this every now and then, but she would always talk about candles in the house.
Yeah.
My mom was very specific about not playing with fire.
Yeah.
I didn't always listen, but she was very specific. But it also, I noticed it throughout my life. Like, gasoline was a big thing with her. I don't know if she had a friend injured, but, you know, playing with gasoline in the garages,
mm-hmm.
like, she was hell no on that. And that ingrained something in me to this day. When I see people playing around bonfires,
yeah.
when I see the dumbass with a gas tank walking towards one,
yep.
I know where I'm going, and that's away.
Yep.
And that didn't start whenever I started working with the Burn Foundation. This was instilled in me at a young age to understand. And it's not just, oh, be afraid of it. It's appreciate its power.
Yes. It's something we cannot control. This is an element that we deal with. And when you throw extra shit in there and you subject yourself to it, we're going to suffer consequences.
Yes.
And, you know, I always had that fear, and I was always that kid. I have lit my backyard on fire because I did stupid shit. And I am super thankful that I wasn't injured.
I've had many a firecracker blow up way too close to me.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about our mission here is that Shay is a success story.
Yes.
And it's a relatively new success story.
Yeah.
And I think it just re-highlights the emphasis that what we're doing here is to make you be back into society. Yeah. You know, you're not a
back to normalcy.
Yeah,
it's not just throwing you back into the – like he mentioned, you know, it's – and Zach mentioned this too. It's not just about throwing you back into the population. I love Bird's kind of perspective of how do we get them back to normalcy where they can work and they can function as a normal individual.
Correct.
Now, Shay's a bit different because he wants to be balls to the wall. But, you know, your standard burn survivor or injured individual, even cancer survivor, mm-hmm. just wants to get back to a state of normalcy.
Yeah.
And that's what we're focused on.
I mean, him looking himself into the mirror and then being called Freddy Krueger at school is that's not getting back to normal. That's not you know, no. We've got to do better. We are doing better, and that's the beautiful thing about this organization is that we're not going to accept shit like that.
No.
That's not going to define who we are. That's not going to define any of our patients or anybody that we deal with.
No.
You're going to be an individual with us, and you're never going to be you're never going to be isolated. You're never going to be alone. And that's our goal, is to help you get back to where you want to be.
Yeah.
He's back where he wants to be, and I don't think he's there yet because he's not happy with not being able to compete in Antarctica or anywhere else. But we've got to get you back to where you want to be. How do we do that? You work with us.
Yeah.
You help us. Let's get our mission out there. Let's get these hospitals. Let's get this research going. We have to do this.
Yeah.
And that's why everything we do here is super critical to success stories like Shay, to success stories like Zach,
R2. And keep in mind, there's no excuse that burn surgery and burn treatment is still pitter-pattering around the Vietnam era. There's no fucking excuse.
There's no excuse whatsoever.
And we can do better as a society, but in order to do that, we have to have advocates for those things.
Mm-hmm.
We have too many firefighters being burned. We have too many civilians being burned. Fire is a regular part of our life for us not to understand that we need to make sure that we know how to heal these people.
And the thing is, this is not facts we're making up. You can go to Firefighter Rescue Survey right now and see that rescues are happening on the regular. People are in fires. They're either dying or they're severely injured, or hope to God that they're able to walk out of the hospital in a couple of days. But people are dying still, and people are being burned, and we haven't done enough in the medical field to fix this problem.
Well, I'll tell you what. Whenever I first started with Sons of the Flag, you know, I was like, well, I'll share what's going on at the fire departments and you know, the fires and stuff like that. If I did that, the Sons of the Flag social media feed would be filled hourly, like with there's a fire here, there's a fire here, there's a fire here, there's a fire here. Like that, it is. We follow so many departments.
Yeah,
there's stuff going on all the time, and there's no way I'm gonna aggregate all of it. But that means that our firefighters are on the front lines. That means that there are civilians and firefighters in harm's way that are getting burned, and it awakens something in me that says that we need to do more. We have to do more. We need to speak to more people like Shay. We need to speak to more people like Zach. We need to speak to more people like Andrew Crocker and these guys who've gone from being in tough situations, overcoming adversity, and get their message out and
Devin Barnhart.
Devin Barnhart. And really get the fire, get the what he says, what the fire ignited. Get something ignited in everyone to say, enough is enough. It's a difficult thing to get burns aren't pretty. It's a difficult thing to get amped up about. But I think whenever you start hearing and seeing what these individuals do, you can.
You know, and it makes it real because, you know, when I heard about Andrew's injury the other day, it made it real. You know, I have dealt with some burn stuff, but we just interviewed him.
Yeah.
Last month in January.
So we'll give you the update. One of our – who we just interviewed our last episode.
Last
episode. Andrew Crocker was on a call. You might know a little bit more of the story.
Yeah, I just know Kansas City Fire. He's an ex-SEAL. He was second and third degree burns on a pretty intense fire.
We just talked to him about a month ago.
He said the injury happened like a week or so after the show released. And it just puts it into perspective. When I got that news that this happened, I'm just like, holy shit, this is real.
Yeah.
And I get it. What we do is real. But it made it more real because I know his first and last name. Yeah. I just talked to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a victim that I deal with on a call, and I'll find their names out later.
Yeah.
That's just the mindset, you know. You can't make it personal at that moment. But it was personal because we literally just talked to him.
Well, and we talked, and that was one of the things that we hit on during mm-hmm. the podcast if yeah. he had experienced something like that, and he had said, you know, I've been minor, you know, what you get as yeah. a firefighter.
Yeah.
And then the next week he's
in a burn unit, having surgeries.
Yeah. And of course we're gonna do everything that we can for him.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
You know, and that kind of brings me real quick about the task force. We need members. We are strong. We always need more. Yeah. We keep talking about advocates for what we do. That's our task force. You guys are our advocates in your local communities, in your local burn centers. And if you want to be a better firefighter, you get the monthly lineup from Greg.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, Greg Turnell, retired lieutenant at a DC fire, sends some of the best lineups and words of wisdom,
yep.
Stories that he has dealt with.
Yep.
But we always get updates on all of our patients and our task force. I'm telling you, it's the one email. I don't look forward to many emails, not from just some, but if anybody.
Yeah.
It's actually one email that I look forward to is reading what Greg has to share, because Greg's got a lot of wisdom.
Yeah.
Greg sees the true mission of Sons of the Flag. Greg's been here since the inception. And
damn near day one.
And Greg is one of the best individuals. If you want to call him up and ask him a question, he's going to. And so that's why I encourage you to reach out to us. If you are interested in joining the task force, send us an email. Get a hold of Landon. We'll get you to Greg. If you want to email Greg direct, you can do that too. On our website, sonsoftheflag.org, you can find all that information. Mm-hmm. You can find out about Mission Reconstruct, all of our programs.
We've got
EJ's kids.
And I was told that I can announce a little bit.
Yeah.
We got some new people coming on to Sons of the Flag that we're extremely excited about.
Awesome.
Stay tuned to social media for that. It's already been announced internally. I'm not going to say anything just yet, because I want to make sure I want to put it out on social media, and I want to see everybody's reaction. But we have some awesome people coming on. We have a new program that's about to start because of those individuals. So it feels really good that coming out of COVID, we're still growing and creating more projects, bringing more people on,
and
rolling the mission.
Yep. Yeah, and so Landon's talking about social media. It's Sons of the Flag on all social media.
Type in
at Sons of the Flag. You'll find us. Shoot us an email. Any of the task force members in your state, if you see there's a state that's not represented and you live in that state.
Come on.
You know, we were just talking about signs from God. That might be your sign that you need to join Sons of the Flag. But we're not going to throw you to the wolves. We're going to build you up. We're going to help you. Dude, we have a hell of a team.
Yeah.
We got a lot of great guys. Gary's, you know, up in Arkansas is just tearing it up. Rob is tearing it up.
Yep.
Ryan, everybody's just, we got huge players.
Gary's doing some awesome events. I mean, he's done an event like every 2 to 3 months, and it's like just, it's been pretty awesome.
And if you need ideas of how to help us, or especially event setting stuff up, or if you need us to be a beneficiary of an event, you know, reach out to us. And I'm telling you, we will make the world happen for you.
And don't forget, for $2,500,
mm-hmm.
you get the surgeries
yep.
that ShaySU went through. That's what that $2,500 yep. gets. You are changing a burn survivor's life forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is, like you heard him say, he's had skin grafts. That skin graft shrunk 65%. This skin graft that we got him for $2,500, thanks to our program out in Tampa, it will not shrink.
Yep. It's because how many botched surgeries has he had? Countless numbers of them.
Yeah.
He's endured more suffering than most of us will ever have to deal with. And then also think about the families. $25 is a go bag.
Yeah.
So those also help fund their families too. So that's
why $75 for some food. You can mm-hmm. you can buy the plane trip. You can pay for the hotel.
You can see on our website, it's got a breakdown of what you would be able to fund with each dollar that you give to us. And like I said, $2,500 is what we're looking for, because it funds Shay's surgeries.
Yeah, everything.
It funds Andrew's surgeries if he ever has to have them.
Yeah,
it takes care of everybody that we've swore to protect, you know, and that's a beautiful thing.
Those of you who've donated got Zach Sutterfield a new finger.
Yep.
I mean, that's I don't think we can stress how incredible that is.
Yep, absolutely, man. So,
all right.
Sonsoftheflag.org, sonsoftheflag.org. Wow. sonsoftheflag.org. All social media at Sons of the Flag. If you have questions, hit up Landon, Sherry, if you need an application for burn survivor assistance. Mm-hmm. It'll go to Sherry. Sherry will then forward it on, or you can send it, get to Landon. Greg's for the task force. Like I said, we got some badasses in place. We've got a bright future.
Yep.
Nothing's stopping us. And
we're 10 years strong, and we're going to keep going.
We hope that you can join this team and make us successful. So thank you to Shay. What the Fire Ignited is his book. Get out there and get it. I promise you, it's an easy read. It's a simple read, but it's got a lot of good shit in there. Yeah. So thank you guys again for listening. Thank you for always being there to support us. Landon, you know, thank you. This is always a blast, man.
Hell
so
yeah. Looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely. So thank you guys. Hope you enjoyed listening tonight. And, you know, as always, just make sure you keep the mission first. Thank you.